Our Colors Aquarium Gallery podcast brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
Today we're going to get pretty darn specific about a really, really cool group of fish. One that Charles is particularly fond of.
Yeah.
Which, what that means is Amy and I are going to rely pretty heavily on Charles for this one. But, you know.
I feel like anyone who actually gets the opportunity to observe these fish ends up falling in love with them.
I think that's absolutely true.
It's really hard to get cuter than this.
Before we tell anyone what they are, though, I would like to do a shameless plug. I really want that suspense.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Don't read the name of the episode.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, guys, we're going to have a lot of fun stuff coming to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com in the new year. Lots of new plants, lots of good plans to grow them better and faster, so keep an eye on that. But you can always order merch, dry goods, and plants from our website. Please do.
We are producing some awesome plant stuff.
Yeah, there's some really cool stuff.
Transition period of trying to get the immersed ones. Let's just skip that part and make sure that we send out good.
Yeah, that's the sweet spot of the process that we're really trying to make easier on you guys. Is we're selling plants every day here. We're transitioning them so that they're easier to grow. I want to make that available to our listeners too.
And
everything we sent out, cross our fingers, has gone out well so far, despite weather and whatever other delays. So don't be too shy.
We're definitely getting some weather this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we also have to plug, too, if you have questions for us, please send them to podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com with some sort of subject of don't look at this, Charles, or whatever else. Make sure Charles doesn't read it.
Yeah, I have resisted the temptation thus far.
That's good, because if you cheat, I'll know.
They can be questions about your aquarium, questions about our experience. Personal questions.
Careful.
I don't know. We'll curate them. Nick will curate them so it's nothing weird. So
yeah, there we go. But we're going to have fun with it.
I think it's going to be great.
Yep. And I have one more digression.
One more.
Yeah. I want to read an email. It says, "Hi, I just want to say thanks to Charles for the very nice way he responded to my question on the clown loach recently. I so like your way of dealing with these matters. Also, I want to tell I visited my local fish store and was amazed by a new fish for me, the Dario Dario, such an impressive little fish. I think you have mentioned it once, but when I saw it, I was like, wow, what kind of fish is this? Also, Ben is responsible for my peacock gudgeons. They are also amazing. So different from other fish. I wish the best from the holidays. Christopher in Sweden."
Very cool. Thank you, Christopher.
Yeah.
I love seeing that stuff.
Yeah, it just feels good.
Mm-hmm. And peacock gudgeons are that awesome.
They are.
There's also the satisfaction of spreading the disease, right? Ooh, somebody else got to see Scarlett Battison do a double take. I'm so happy for you.
They're so cool.
So anyways, are we going to finally tell people what we're talking about today?
Yeah, if you didn't read it in the title of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you're one of those people that just saw the notification and clicked play without reading anything.
Amy, when did you first hear of licorice gouramis?
I think I first heard of licorice gouramis in my sort of initial research into anabantids when I started getting into aquariums. So right around the time I started here would have been when I came across them.
I remember the first picture I saw of a licorice gourami. It was that one that's got the really stark black and white stripes when it's doing its display. And it, in its display, the tail was all splayed out, and it was like at a weird angle.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a minute to figure out what I was looking at. It wasn't like automatically, wow, look at that cool fish. It was a, what the heck? Where's the head?
Some weird fish.
Yeah. So full disclosure, my contribution to this is going to be based off of a talk I did for Grand Valley Aquarium Club a few years ago. So it's going to go in a slightly different rhythm than we normally do. And that's because it was originally designed to be just me. but I'm very curious to see what kind of commentary we'll get here. This is not my talk. This is just, let's say, curated in the general direction of that.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
That works.
I think there's one misconception that it's really important for us to clear up here at the beginning before we get into techie stuff and species and complexes, because anyone who I've ever met who's aware of licorice gummies has the same misconception about them, that they're sensitive and difficult to keep fish.
Oh, right.
Our survival rate with them is absurdly high.
I don't think I can ever remember having lost one.
Yeah.
I think there's one downstairs that may have died of old age, actually. And yeah. that's the only one. And this is from back when, like, I first started, when I was the only person feeding and, you know, missing stuff and not standing there and watching fish eat. Even at that time, we had a fantastic success rate with licorice grommies. They yeah. are very hardy.
It's definitely a fish that tolerates a lot.
It does.
It does need some more specifics if the goal is to breed them and to get those incredible intense colors out of the males, then you do have to be a little bit more specific with water parameters.
Yeah, and breeding them is hard.
Right.
Yeah.
But keeping them,
so easy.
Mm-hmm.
There's another misconception about them that we need to address, and that just goes with gouramis in general.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think I would say it this way. Generalizing about gouramis is like generalizing about cichlids.
Yeah.
Right. Just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Yeah. So a blue gourami versus a kissing gourami versus a licorice gourami. Those are that's an Oscar and a Pisto, and I don't know, a tilapia.
Mbuna.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even better. Tilapia is even better.
Just completely different than all the other gouramis. In fact, one of them, Parasphrenamos, that's the genus we're talking about, Parasphrenamos politicola. Politicola, I think that I'm saying that close to right. When I was first just flipping through pictures, I thought I was looking at a betta.
Yeah. They're really weird fish. I think starting off with these guys from the perspective of, like, taxonomy and then like their weird biological quirks and then working way towards husbandry is what makes most sense.
Husbandry?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that makes the most sense to me. Just because, man, are they weird fish. If you really want to talk about a fish in a completely other end of the spectrum, yes, I'm plugging our YouTube channel. the exact opposite end of the spectrum is we did a video on soda cichlids. Those...
Oh, yeah.
Licorice grommies are probably second for me in fish that made me go, what the heck? Like, how does that work?
Why do you live there?
That makes no sense. So, Parasphrenamos is really, like, strange history because they were originally a monotypic genus, and it took a long time before anyone took the time to figure out there's more than one species.
Another 26, I think, is where they're at?
Yeah, I think there's about 25, depending on who's counting, described. And then there's an additional 60 forms that are, like, acknowledged, and it's not fully understood if these 60 forms, like, a lot of them are probably going to be sorted out as individual species, mm-hmm. but a lot of them are probably regional variations of other species.
Essentially color morphs.
Yes. One of the things that really stood out to me about them is that they are a labyrinth fish that rarely uses their labyrinth organ.
Ooh.
Yeah. They're very weird.
That's amazing that it, considering the condition some of these fish come from,
yeah.
you'd almost think the opposite. Like, this is a labyrinth fish because they really need it.
I think they just don't need that much oxygen.
Yeah. And
somehow.
Yeah.
They also, like, form submerged bubble nests within caves. But I feel like saying bubble nest is really generous.
Okay.
Because, like, the nest I've seen and the pictures I've seen, like, 10 bubbles is a lot.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, these are not big nests.
It's just a pillow.
Yeah. I did really want to hone in on, like, the insane adaptations of these organisms, yeah, yeah. though, because these come from peat swamps and peat rivers and peat. Low pH. Like, low enough pH that if you are collecting in these environments, you need to be aware of how long you're in the water. Otherwise, you'll start getting acid burns.
Yeah, I've heard the collectors set timers.
Yes.
Right, so they can get out and rinse off and give their skin a break. So look, that's nuts.
Yeah, like, these environments are so acidic that a lot of the processes that we're familiar with in aquariums don't work.
Coca-Cola has a lower pH than some of the environments these fish, or a higher pH. A higher pH than some of the environments for these fish come from.
Yes, as low as like I've seen some. What's the word? Not dubious. What's the opposite of that? Credible. Credible sources that indicate that like 2.2 is feasible.
The lowest I saw was 3.5.
What is stomach acid again?
If very it's low. Actively digesting, around 2.
If it's not, it's around 3.2.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's insanity.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are environments that are often so acidic that like nitrifying bacteria can't survive. Funguses can't survive. Mm-hmm. A lot of the bacterial processes we're familiar with can't survive. Decomposition doesn't happen. I actually had an interesting conversation.
Wait, is decomposition different than I'm melting?
Yes, actually.
Can we call these the fire swamps?
Yes.
I'm not saying I'd want to build a summer home here, but the trees are really quite lovely.
It's lovely. But like, a lot of these environments seem to be geared towards, instead of having like bacteria or fungus or algae being the base of the ecosystem, a lot of the ecosystem seems to be based around organisms that degrade or can chew up or access somehow botanicals.
Detritivores and like...
Yes.
There we go.
So like, that means that you can kind of make parallels with this environment as being more similar to open ocean floor, where it's like the marine snow.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Than you could
most
other aquatic and marine environments.
Only this time it's like 8 inches deep.
Yeah. Yes.
Instead of 8,000 feet.
Like, this is a really specialized, weird environment.
Cool. You know what's super annoying in the light of all that information? Every licorice gourami species is threatened.
Yes.
They can survive that, but they can't survive us.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Every single species is threatened.
Mm-hmm.
Predominantly because a lot of these environments make great palm oil plantations.
Yeah.
I want to be very clear that this is the humanitarian in me.
Yep.
This is not the fault of the farmers.
Right.
This is the fault of consumers who have created an economy where the only viable option for you as a farmer is to either expand the farm or let your kids go hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the decision you're making, that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
That's an easy choice. But no one should have to be in that position.
Right.
And that's on us. Anyone who tells you that environmental issues are not humanitarian issues is lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a great example of that.
No human who has an alternative wants to destroy their home.
Exactly.
Right. Well said.
So how can you do better? Avoid palm oil. There are other options out there. And if you want to specifically contribute to the conservation of these environments, fun fact, orangutans are usually found in the canopy above these environments.
Almost all of them are Borneo. Right?
Yes. So you have to be a little bit more creative if you're trying to contribute to like mainland
mm-hmm.
licorice gourami conservation. But like the Borneo Orangutan Survival Foundation is like, that's a foundation that I would endorse. That they do good stuff. So if you're looking for a specific place, that would be where I'd start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And palm oil is in everything. Everything
yeah.
creamy and oily that you own, take a look at the ingredients. There are a couple of like pseudonyms for it too, where they usually say something like palmitate or something like that. But beauty supplies and foods are the two biggest places to look for it.
I was recently in Thailand and I saw a bunch of these palm oil plantations, and the local people there don't have any concept that the plantations are problems. Something else that really needs to be kept in mind, and this is a harsh one for us Americans to hear, farmland destroys ecosystems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? There's no ecosystems left in places in America, in the United States, where it's good farmland. Okay, no is a big word. There's very little. So that's just the developing countries saying, hey, we need to have farms too, just like you guys.
Yeah, we already did it.
Right, we did. Yeah. Anyway, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Now back to your regular schedule program.
We're not going to get into the monoculture rant here.
Right.
Yeah. So Ben, picture yourself on the bank of a peat swamp. Mm-hmm. Can you describe to me how you think you would be able to find anything in this habitat would be like?
The water is pretty darn dark. Mm-hmm. So finding them would be challenging.
Mm-hmm. But you mentioned dark. There's another thing that compounds making them, finding them hard.
Yeah, and you're not just talking about the tannins in the water?
Piles and piles of leaves?
Leaf litter.
No, right? Leaf litter, and there's a giant canopy above you.
Oh, right.
True.
There's like no light, and the water is dark, and there's, let's just say, muck everywhere. Yeah. And so with all that in mind, I would say licorice grommies are animals that are creatures of light.
Creatures of light.
Yes.
So they like to find those little sunbeams.
Yes.
This brings the deep sea comparison even more relevant.
Like organisms, and humans are great at this too. Like organisms are obsessed with the thing they can't have.
Oh, sure.
And so in the case of the licorice grommie, light is a limited and rare resource, so they want it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Right. And why do they want that light?
Because of their courtship displays.
Makes them look pretty.
They are absurdly like specialized at refracting light at a female so that they flash and look pretty. Licorice grommies, males are just so good at understanding what angle of light they need and how to position their body with any given light in order to get their color to flash in a specific direction. Their color does not go every direction. So like the same licorice grommie in motion will look weird. Okay, kind of cool. Oh my God, amazing. Oh, he moved again. And that's part of their charm for me because they are so aware of how they look. And
kind of like you.
Sure. And did you know that you can actually define them as either a heads-up courtship display or tails-up courtship display?
That's one of my favorite licorice grommie facts.
Yeah.
Like, differentiating between species includes the way they flirt.
Yes. So I'll come back around to this, but I want everyone going forward from here to be like, thinking about the fact that these are fish that understand light, understand how it works, and how to work it to their advantage.
And they're tiny.
And yeah. They're tiny.
Like the big ones are an inch and a half.
Yes.
It's basically like if a cardinal tetra could turn it on and off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So this is where I shift to the hobbyist perspective. When you take this scientific background, how can you use this to your advantage? You mentioned, I'm going to start off with, you brought up they're tiny.
Yeah.
I think they're an underappreciated challenge because there are advantages to them being so small.
Oh, yeah.
A pair of them in a 2.5 gallon is entirely viable for their entire lives.
Easily.
Not
easily.
Only viable, it feels like a lot of space.
Yeah.
It's kind of the tank they should be in.
Yeah. They enjoy exploring a 2.5.
Are they jumpers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we need to find a glass top for the puddle.
By
puddle is a tank put out by Hydro Aquatics, which is, I think it's 8x8x4 inches deep.
I think it's 3.5, but yeah.
It's an adorable teeny
it's
little
amazing.
Tank.
It's amazing.
It would, with a lid, it would be a fantastic little licorice grommie tank.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yes, they're challenging to breed. Again, Ben brought that up.
Right.
But like making 2 gallons of black water is pretty manageable.
That's easy.
It's not like if I was trying to tout to you that like, oh, the 40-gallon breeder of Blackwater, that's a different thing. That's a lot harder to do. Mm-hmm.
And they're a challenge to breed and they're threatened. So I think anybody who keeps licorice grammy should at least have that as a goal in mind. But even if you just like them, you're still paying somebody to collect that fish instead of paving over that swamp.
Yes.
That's a very, very important point to bring up. I think, Charles, you told me the story, but it's on the Paris Phrenemus Project website, which is a website dedicated to preserving and promoting licorice grammys. And you should check it out if you have any interest in them at all. But there's a story on there about why it's so important that we start doing something about these fish now. And some of the people on that site went to Borneo and they found this new species of licorice gourami and started to do documentation. And like, wow, we got to come back here and we got to get some. And they came back 6 months later and the entire ecosystem was gone.
Gone.
And I'm paraphrasing that story a little bit, but that's essentially how that went.
Yeah, I think the table was like a year.
Okay.
Because I remember it was, they brought back a few dead ones in order to do the scientific description. Mm-hmm. And then they went back to collect for hobbyist keeping. Mm-hmm. And they were gone.
Yeah. And like, likely the only place we will ever find that species. Yeah,
that
yeah.
species doesn't exist on the planet anymore.
Yeah. Like,
they're done.
Like, and that one really stuck out to me because that was like, we knew of that thing's existence literally just long enough to know it exists.
Right.
Or to know it doesn't anymore.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
so
that article is a tough read from the people who have built their life around preserving these animals.
Yeah.
So sad.
So we were talking about licorice grammy habitat and how crazy it is. And oh, the puddle tank that we need to
do.
Yes.
Yep.
So we left off on please keep them. Maybe we're on here's what they are.
Yeah, I did want to give a few notes about husbandry considerations. I think 2.5 gallons works for most species, and I will get to it. There are a few species that get large enough that I think 5 gallons for a pair is more proper. Yeah. But that's me saying that's the extreme big ones. Mm-hmm. Anything between 72 and 78 degrees Fahrenheit seems to be viable for them. I think if you're trying to breed, for most species, the range of a pH of 5 to 6 is probably going to be your
It does
goal.
Seem like when I was looking through the Paris Phrenemus website and they kind of go through the different species, they clearly gauge this one's a hard one, this one's an easy one, this one's an intermediate. Mm-hmm. And it's all based on what pH they can stand.
Yes.
Right.
Lower pH environments are less stable.
Right.
It's almost like they have less buffers.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go through every species of licorice grammy. I think that's kind of cruel.
There's a few too many, but there's definitely some distinct complexes.
Yeah.
That can, with some examples of ones that are readily, I don't say readily available, but we're just going to go with, I think we just use the word sometimes available, because with many of these species, it doesn't matter how cool you think they are. You're just not going to get them.
Yeah. In my presentation, I didn't go by complex or because those don't seem very well defined to me yet. And I didn't go with most common. I wanted representatives of different things I think licorice grammys can be. And then there'll be similar or closely related or can fit certain aspects. So the first one I wanted to talk about is Paris Phrenemus decinerei. This is the first species that was ever described, and it definitely gets the most name recognition because of that. I also think that it's also like probably the wrong species.
Wrongest wrong?
Yes, because I don't think I've ever seen one. I've never seen someone with one, and I've never, at least not in the States, and I've never,
really?
Yes. I've seen a lot of things labeled as one. I've never seen one.
Oh, okay.
Because it's the oldest name, it's the name that most collectors know.
What's the species again?
Desneria.
Okay.
And
I've never seen that name on our list.
Yeah. No. They're exceedingly rare. They're native to Bangka. And that's it.
Is that on the island of Borneo or is that a stone island?
I think it's Stone Island.
Oh, gotcha.
Neat.
Therein lies the rub.
So if they're not from there, it's not that. I will say they are a larger species. I would recommend a 5-gallon tank for a pair of these. And they are a head-down species.
I love it that that's a thing.
I also, this is another one where I was kind of like, you probably haven't seen it, but you've probably seen closely related species. More so than the Desneri, because the Desneri, I don't think I've seen a closely related species. I think it's just a name applied to any licorice grammy if the collector doesn't know what it is.
Gotcha.
But Bintan.
Bintan is one that we've seen. Come in labeled as Bintan.
Yeah.
They're not impossible to get. They're somewhat rare because, again, they're native to Bintan.
Did those come in as CF Bintan or did it come in as Bintan?
CF Bintan would not surprise me. I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
But like a lot of the undescribed forms that you might know are probably closely related. Like the, what is it? The fire and ice, Batu Pahat.
That one's on our list a lot.
Yeah. That's probably closely related to this species. This is another heads down one. The species in this group seem to be moderately easy to breed as far as licorice grammys go. They do tend to like it closer to 5 than 6. And,
that's helpful.
Yep.
pH-wise.
Yes. Another like group species in this group that we see more often is Rubamantis. These are native to Western Malaysia. And I will say a couple things about it. Habitat almost entirely destroyed is my note on it. They're considered critically endangered. Imports labeled as this are dubious at best because of that. But there are a not, as far as licorice grammys go, when we talk about licorice grammys, we need to reframe our focus here again, because like when we say there are a lot of people breeding them, it means like 20 people in the world.
Yeah. Right.
But
these are specialists fish.
Yes.
And I'm saying that not to scare people off, but to talk about how uncommon they are.
Yeah.
We need more specialists and y'all should be specialists out there.
Mm-hmm. Maybe to encourage them, we should call them fish geek fish.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's true, because a lot of people probably just went, oh, wait, I'm a fish geek.
Yeah, you are. If you're this far into this podcast, you are officially a fish geek.
Right.
I did want to bring this one up specifically because there are two things about it other than the critically endangered and imports are dubious at best. There are a handful of people who are actually working with this species specifically. So if you find those breeders, they are around. You can keep continuing the bloodlines. I will say that as far as licorice grammys go, you probably want a little bit more experience. They seem to be one of the more demanding species. They seem to like it below 5 for breeding, specifically because the indications from the sources that I trust most about it seem to be that this species is really sensitive to bacterial loads.
I think that's going to be a common theme with any of the, well, any fish in general that likes a pH lower than 5.
Yeah.
They're susceptible to bacterial infections, because where they live, they don't have any need for any immunity whatsoever to a bacterial infection because there aren't any.
Yeah. So yeah, I think this is a cool species. This is also in that Bintan group where it's like, yeah, they're all probably closely related.
So if you were going to do a licorice grammy tank,
mm-hmm.
a 2.5-gallon tank,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to do your weekly water changes,
mm-hmm.
let's do a 0.5-gallon. How are you going to make your water?
When I was doing it, I kept a 5-gallon bucket that I used, Brightwell Aquatics, black water extract, and catapa leaves and coconut husk and RO water, so that it like, what's the word? seasons.
Basically, you made
steeps.
Tea.
Yes, steeps.
Steeps is the word.
Thank you. Well, between water changes. And like the reality is that if I'm only doing like half a gallon a week, like if I take a week to set it up and then through time it's still steeping, it'll be fine for like a month.
I think this might be one of the few tanks where I think a cartridge filter is the perfect choice. You know, usually I hate cartridge filters because you take your good bacteria that you grow and you throw them away.
Yeah.
But if you're keeping a pH below 5, you're not growing any bacteria.
You only
need mechanical filtration.
But no carbon.
No carbon. Oh, that would be the problem with cartridges. You're right. The carbon would pull the tannins out.
But I mean, if you put in like a cartridge filter that had like what is it called? Neolite?
Oh, yeah.
That would be useful.
That's true. Like Amozorb.
Yeah. Right?
That's a good idea.
Zeolite.
Thank you.
Yes. The Europeans are like, what are you guys? You don't know this?
No, I'm sorry. Filamentosis is the next species I want to talk about. Uh-huh. I think this is the best beginner.
That was what the Paris Phanemus website said. It was either filamentosis or Linkii as like...
Yeah, those are both good options. Yeah.
And both relatively available.
The filamentosis, I think I would skew towards a little bit more. It's a slightly larger species, so I think closer to 3-4 gallons is better. I don't think 5 is, strictly speaking, necessary. But I think depending on how you keep them, you might want a little bit more space because they don't need as low a pH. So if you're keeping them in, 6.5... where nitrifying bacteria can kind of do stuff a little bit, maybe you want to consider a little bit more space.
Yeah.
Because we haven't explained it in this podcast, which shame on us, but lower pH environments, ammonia is not toxic.
It's crazy.
It's below 6, right?
5.5, I think.
5.5? Okay.
Yeah. These guys are native to Kalimantan Tengah, which I think is the eastern province. They're a head-down courtship species, and they're really, really fun to play around with.
I think if you did one of those 7-gallon rimless tanks, I think it's the Sheik.
Oh, yeah.
With a group of, like, 7 chili reservoirs and a pear.
By the way, chili reservoirs are native to these habitats.
Exactly.
And a perfect dither for these fish.
Yeah. You can't go wrong.
Not that they really need it. For their size and temperament, they are not really all that shy.
No. Big sigh, because we're getting to... So this is probably my favorite species, Nagii.
That's my favorite, too.
I love it.
They are... So if you saw me messing with my phone here while y'all were chatting, that was me bringing up our current availability list from our amazing wholesaler. And Nagii and Gunawani. Are the two species currently available through the wholesaler.
Nagii seems to be the most available to us.
It's because they have a fairly wide distribution for a licorice grammy, actually. So they're native to Malaysia. They have, most licorice grammys have, let's say a collection of ponds that they're native to.
Yeah.
This species seems a little bit more widespread. Let's say part of a province. They're still threatened. Don't get lax just because they have more space.
Right.
They're a little bit more adaptable, but they are, I won't say super easy, but they're not a 5 either.
Is that who we were working on downstairs?
That's who we were working on until I sold them.
Okay.
Oh, you sold them.
Yeah.
That was such an awesome pair. Their body shape is a little bit different, and I think that's what I like about them.
Yeah. They're another head down. We'll get back to what's going on there.
Cool.
But, man, it's almost like a purpley-red color, the male when he's in spawning dress.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible to beat.
And they're one of the better, they're a little bit more colorful even when they're not showing.
Yes.
So I like that about them, too.
Mm-hmm. You can sex them because the males will have the blue highlights in the fins and the females won't.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So even when they're not colored up, which is challenging with a lot of fish,
yes.
You can sex them. That's good.
Yeah, and when they're not colored up, they're not like red, purple. They're more like orangey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the pH on those guys?
Like 5.5 is the ideal, but like up to like 6 seems feasible.
What I like about those higher pH ones, and this is me being selfish, right? You don't have to have quite as much tannin in the water, so you can see it a little better and have a little cooler aquascape to go along with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe get some plants in there or something. Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, nitrifying bacteria doesn't work right. in these environments, so ammonia is the preferred source for a lot of plants. Now, you need to be very specific about what plants you put in these environments because, like we mentioned, this is a very specialized environment, but there are many types of boosts that prefer it.
Mm-hmm. Some of the boosts and some of the urios should be,
yeah,
should be good.
Should be good. So what was the species you alluded to earlier when you said really low pH in the collection location?
Parvulus.
Yeah.
Yes, and my numbers were wrong. 2.7 was mm-hmm. what the breeding report was from. And for perspective, lime juice has a pH of 2.8.
Yes. Yeah. So I actually want to talk about that one now. Do you know what's the highest pH I've ever read of a breeding report on this species?
I bet it's less than 4.
A little higher, but not much. Okay. 4.4.
4.4.
That's the highest.
Right.
This species is fairly rare, even as far as licorice gouramis go, and they are hard because they do seem to be one of the species that like the reputation of being sensitive mm-hmm. and specific mm-hmm. and like it seems to be warranted with this species. But here's a fun fact about them. They are one of, I think, 2 heads up species.
Right.
So I think that's my pitch for, hey, get experienced with other licorice gouramis. If you're still into it and you get really experienced and you have success with like 2 or 3 species and you want to hit that notch of I've done both families of courtships, this is the one to go for.
Or even if this is what you really want and you've dialed in your black water methods.
Yeah.
Like if you know how to hit a pH and keep it there, then try whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the quick peruse of a few species. I think that, at least for me, that hits the notes of like different flavors of licorice gouramis. There's clearly more.
Right.
Are there any that I didn't mention that anyone here at the table wants to make sure?
Gunna One Eye is available, mm-hmm. so we should mm-hmm. talk about that one.
Okay. Moderately large species. Like the filamentosis, they can handle slightly higher pH. They don't, at least for breeding. Let's be clear. All of these species have displayed amazingly for us, except for the parvulus. NPH is as high as 7.8. Like, they don't...
Right.
Yeah, we were keeping them in straight tap when I was the one in charge.
Yeah, they don't need low pH to live. They need it to breed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when I'm talking about these pHs, I want to be very clear on that.
I do think, though, however, I'm just going to intercede here a little bit,
yeah.
that if you're doing a liquor scrummy setup...
Breed.
Well, that too. That's not what I was going to get to.
Never.
Choose stuff to go in the aquarium that's not going to keep that pH high. So we have a high pH tap water coming. It's 7.4, mm-hmm. 7.6 coming out of the tap. Sometimes even 7.8.
Mm-hmm.
But if you set your tank up with a dirted substrate or a neutral substrate,
mm-hmm.
and you put plants in there and you keep driftwood in there and even change the driftwood out every once in a while, do some things, some of the really, really easy things to affect the pH and hardness of the water.
Yeah.
And it'll just be better for them. And uh-huh. that's not effort.
It's easy.
It's just choices you make at the beginning during yeah. setup that can...
Even pay attention to what kind of sand you're adding and right. stuff like that. Those are all easy things to do.
Right. Pretty much if it's white, don't put it in the tank with liquor scrap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what other species we have seen on lists, just so, like, if you see one available, I'm assuming it's probably come on our list once or twice.
Yeah.
Ornaticata?
Yeah, those do show up fairly regularly. They're kind of a moderate species. I think pH, like, 5.5 should be the goal with those. They are I don't know off the top of my head, but given that I said that two species are heads up, I'm going to say they're heads down.
And I think we already mentioned Tweedii.
We did not.
No, we didn't. One showed up from time to time.
Yeah. That's a good one.
I'm just pulling up another old list here just to see. All right, who are we missing here? And this was from a couple of months ago. And the species Batu Pahat.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's the fire and ice we were talking about earlier.
That's my dream licorice grammy.
Centangnesis.
Oh, yeah. I don't know anything about that one.
They just call that licorice grammy centang.
I don't know anything about that one.
Wow. Interesting.
That's got to just be a collection location. I wonder what it is.
Negye and Gonawanai.
Yeah.
This one, they are calling it Parasphenamos centangnensis, not species or CF centangnensis.
Huh.
They're calling it a described species. Who knows? That's how it was shipped to them.
The struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now Charles and I get to have the fun debate that we always have about these little difficult fish. Feeding.
Yeah. I'm going to say, first off, anyone that tells you that they need live foods, I think is lying to you.
They just aren't creative.
They're just weak.
Yeah. Every single licorice grommy that's ever come in our hands has easily taken to frozen food. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say this. I do think that if you're trying to breed, I think live food is going to help you a lot because, mm-hmm. again, they're very specialized. My experience was with live Moina cultures. I think if I was ever going to try licorice grommies again at home, I would be much more fastidious about trying to do baby brine because I think my personal lack of success was because of a not high enough fat diet.
Oh, that makes sense.
So I think more baby brine would have made a big difference for me.
What about microworms? Those are dead easy.
Yeah, those are solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, microworms and frozen Daphnia are what...
If I was going to mm-hmm. bother with a live food, it's going to be microworms.
I know, right? That's the only food that I've ever successfully kept long-term.
Now, I've also killed off plenty.
Oh, yeah. And they stank.
I haven't tried it, but I imagine that vinegar eels would be a hit with these.
Yeah.
Too creepy.
But they'll take bloodworms, frozen bloodworms, too.
Mm-hmm. Frozen Daphnia is mm-hmm. my favorite food for fish like that.
Yeah. When I was in charge of feeding them, I just kept them with our Neocardina cultures and they'd pick off the tiny babies.
Yeah, that's viable too.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Didn't have enough time to train them.
Jeez.
Getting those guys to eat frozen Daphnia to me is, I mean, that's an easy, a lot of those small fish that, oh, they won't take anything unless it's live. Yeah, try frozen Daphnia. We've killifish, batis, licorice grommies. I mean, it's a great way to start getting to drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about some of our personal experiences with them.
Mm-hmm.
Personally at home, I have worked with Negye and Phelomatosis. I was working with them in 3-gallon tanks. The Negye's, I never quite got to the point where I had fry that were doing well, but I did get eggs a few times. And this is me going back to, I think, the fact that the fry died within the first few days is the indicator of not enough fat.
That makes sense.
Have either of you worked with them before?
Just here.
Oh, just here? Okay.
Yeah.
Although I'm really thinking about that puddle.
Mm. Yeah.
It would just look sweet, too. Mm. Yeah, the Negye we tried to breed here is like the peak of my experience, which we got him to display, and he started to get a little bit reclusive, but I don't think the maintenance of the tank got the attention that it should have to keep the pH low.
Yeah. But I think that's a great segue into, honestly, part of why I've never succeeded other than me stopping trying to work at home is that I just keep selling them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are such a niche fish that anytime someone comes in and they're like, I really want to try these, it's a gamble I'm willing to make.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's someone at home with 3 tanks trying it out and us here with, how's that math work? 6,100 gallons of fresh water.
Something like
that. I want to bet on the guy that has fewer things distracting him.
I was wondering where you were going with that. And that is exactly the right way.
Yeah. Like, I don't care that technically we're more experienced or what, doesn't matter.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, we need more licorice grammy breeders. Mm-hmm. And so if someone comes in here and they say, I want to try these, I'm going to sell them.
Yeah, for sure.
Because if one in 20 of those guys succeeds, that's amazing.
And I want to reiterate too here while we're talking about this. If we need more licorice grammy breeders, we need more licorice grammy keepers.
Yes.
Yes.
We need a demand for licorice grammys in the hobby.
So what else can we keep with them?
Well, we mentioned the chili rasboras.
Yeah. Any small rasboras.
Any small rasboras.
Yeah. Shrimp.
Shrimp.
Mm-hmm. What about Battus? What do you think about putting Battus with these guys?
I'd be very selective about the species.
Okay.
They kind of fill a similar niche too, so they might be a little competitive.
True. Yeah.
But in the right tank.
I know people have kept them successfully with, and we've done it here, with chocolate gouramis.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. We did do that.
They don't seem to register each other as competition at all.
That surprises me.
It's so, like, I tried it because I know three people personally who've done it. And I was like, okay, we'll try it here. Yeah. It works.
But I don't know if I've ever seen either of those groups of species aggressive.
That's also fair.
It's almost like you can, like, we can't group licorice grammys with other grammys, but if you're gonna, chocolate grammys and sparkling grammys mm-hmm. are the ones that I would put.
Yeah. Yeah. I know some of the, I haven't done it myself. This is not me saying, here's the green light. I've seen a lot of people pull off keeping Cocina complex bettas with them.
Interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
That would be cool.
I'm thinking coolie loaches.
That would work. That would be really cool.
That would be fun as long as you're not trying to breed.
Yeah.
Like the chili rasboras, I think you might be able to pull off.
Oh yeah.
A breeding project with them. But, coolie loaches would snake their way in and
yeah,
but she's trying to advocate for keepers.
Yeah, true.
Because you know, if we need more breeders, we need places for them to sell their product.
I'm leaning pretty hard on setting up a pair of licorice grammys with a group of chili rasboras and a bunch of little shrimp.
Oh, yeah. Oh my god, it would be so cute.
It'd be perfect.
Although I think you'd have to make sure that the pH Venn diagram crosses in the right spot, because the shrimp can really only get down to 6.5, maybe 6.
Yeah, you could do the crystals.
True. You could do some
He's
really cool stuff there.
Making a lot of sense right now.
The mm-hmm. cardinas, not the neocardinas.
How low of a pH can flame moss take?
I don't know.
No idea.
Because I feel like that texture would look really cool with shrimp and licorice grammys.
That would be pretty.
And that would give all of them a little bit of a protective surface to do their little magic in.
Yeah.
You might be able to get some chili rasbora fry out of something like that.
That would be so cool.
We've heard of a couple of accidental spawns from local people.
Oh, yeah?
It's rare, but it happens.
We might need to try that with our next batch. You know, we get them and we put them through the quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's put them in a quarantine tank that's full of moss.
Oh, yeah. That'd be sweet.
We have that tank full of spawning mops, actually.
Put like 6 or 8 spawning mops in a 20 long one time.
And we just put stuff in it and see what happens.
Yeah. All right. So they're jumpers. We need a covered tank.
Yep.
pH is pH is the one challenge for breeding. It's not the challenge for keeping as far as most species are concerned. Most available species.
Yeah. I also want to talk about filtration. In the tanks I was keeping them in, I had low flow sponge filters. But it wasn't because I needed a filter, because I was keeping them in a low enough pH that wasn't really a factor for me. I found that my heater wasn't evenly distributing heat.
Oh, without circulation.
So I wanted just enough flow to distribute heat.
There's also you're going to have a ton of junk in that tank and you want to be able to see. So let's have a little mechanical filtration on there.
That's why I like the little hang in the back minions.
Oh, those are awesome.
Sponge filters are fantastic filters. They do great. They work great. They're extremely effective. They're just ugly.
And they're loud.
Yeah, it's true.
Genuinely, it was part of the spousal factor in those tanks not being at home anymore.
Yeah, I don't use sponges at home for the same reason. I don't like the sound.
Mm-hmm. But a little, one of those little minions with the little...
You'd never even know.
There's, if you guys aren't haven't been here and seen ours, there's a little mini hang on the back filter by Azu called the Mignon, which is French for cute, by the way.
Is that what... that makes me like them even more.
And they're just these little tiny chambers with a little sponge in them. And
I think
just
about
perfect
size yeah. filter.
They're $20, right?
Yeah, they're $20. And anything below 5 gallons is the perfect filter for.
Technically, the biggest size is $30. Okay. Come on.
That's the Minion 150.
Yeah, I think that's rated for up to 10 gallons.
I think so. I don't know that I... 9 gallons is pushing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it depends on what you're keeping, right?
Yeah, the flow is so low on it, but that's what I love about them.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like a little toy.
They're amazing for shrimp tanks, by the way.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and they come with pre-filters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which means a little cover on the intake so it doesn't suck your little shrimplets up.
Yes.
That'd be perfect for Chris Grammys.
They used to be cartridge filters, and they changed it, and now they're not.
I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm. They just come with sponges now. Like just little thin sponges. So no carbon, just sponges.
You just changed things for me.
Mm-hmm.
It like changed. In a good way. That's awesome.
It was such a good choice for that filter.
I can't believe that's never come up before. That was a conversation Amy and I had months ago where we're like, wow, the hobby's getting better.
Yeah.
Nobody tells me anything.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
That's great. Okay, so Minion filter, lighting.
I really wish there was a tiny Kessel.
I know.
Oh
right?
My gosh.
Smaller than the 80.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think I would probably go with either the Twin Star 30B.
Mm. Yeah.
Or that teeny little lifeguard.
Yeah. That like kind of peninsula style of it looks great on little tanks like that.
Something that does have shadows.
Yeah.
Yeah. You definitely want a light gradient with these because you want them to show off.
I miss those. What were they? Eheim? We had that perfect little nano spotlight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think they just kind of got priced to oblivion and weren't worth it anymore because they don't put out much of anything. But that like single beam of light is what I want in a tank like this.
That was exactly what Charles is looking for in a teeny little Kessel.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would love a Kessel like 16.
Yeah. Yeah, or even an 8.
Yeah.
Yeah, get that spot so we can get that little beam of light.
A full spectrum nano spotlight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I would probably do a sand bottom.
Oh, yeah.
Well, unless you're going to try some of those Irios and some of the stuff that... Because I don't think you want to do an Irio below 5.5.
Most of them need CO2, though.
True.
So, like, Irio Vietnam, you could probably do.
Okay. Can they take that low pH?
They should be able to, but I don't know. It's not a problem I usually have to solve.
Yeah. So if you're running a tank at a pH that low, that's going to change oxygen and CO2 effectiveness in the aquarium itself. At a pH of 5.5, are you going to need CO2 for an area? Or is it just because the pH is higher?
I have no idea.
Don't ask me. I'm not a plant guy.
You could probably let it grow immersed too.
True.
Or you know, just out at the top.
That would be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I bet the licorice grommies can really only jump like an inch or two. So just like a low level with some like kind of brushy plants growing out of the top. That'd be really pretty.
When you're using RO water that you're softening with botanicals, you don't have to worry about hard water stains on the...
That's true.
On the dry portions of the tank.
That does actually help a lot.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Got no specific addendums here. Is this the part where I talk about where you can find resources about them?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
First one obviously is Paris Phenamos Project.
I'm actually going to do that one last just because I have a lot to say about that one. I would check out seriouslyfish.com. Mm-hmm. There's a couple different species on there that are like just seriouslyfish.com. Like if you don't know about it, look it up right now.
Mm-hmm. It's the place to start.
It's the place.
Seriously.
I wish there was a saltwater website this good.
Yeah.
There's not.
No.
Labyrinth Fish World by Horst Linke.
Great book.
Is probably the best printed thing.
Do we have that book?
We do.
Okay.
It's on.
There are 1,800 pictures in that book.
almost all.
Oh, that's right. That's the amazing one with all. I just thought it was the betta.
The book. Big betta book.
Right, but it's got other fish in it too. Mm-hmm. Bettas.
Yeah, the section on licorice gouramis is almost as big as the betta one.
Really?
Yes. His book was amazing to me because there were probably like 8 forms that I'd seen referenced, could not find photos of, could not find any information of. He's got them.
Nice.
Amazing. I only know what little I know about them just because of his book.
Sweet. Yeah, and most of the time they're his pictures, and a lot of the time they're his descriptions too.
Yes. What a guy.
So there's value in that.
So the Paris Feminist Project website.
Yes.
If you're not going with the printed book, this is easily the best resource in the world.
Definitely.
They have tabs where they have gotten PDFs of books that they got permission for, articles from magazines that they got permission for, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like they have, there was a Amazonas special licorice grammy issue about 10 years ago. They have the articles about licorice grammys from that issue on their website for free.
Perfect.
They have a Facebook page. It's pretty active for a fairly small group of people. They're incredibly nice. They're incredibly inclusive. I can't imagine a group this specialized not being, but I highly recommend you check it out.
Niches like that are the peak of the aquarium hobby to me.
For sure.
And I would like to... There are 2 things about the project as a whole that I really want to highlight. So they have objectives. And the objectives are so much for me, like in a... They warm my heart kind of way.
They're kinda in line with the way you think.
Yes.
Resonate.
So, to increase our knowledge of the genus Paris Firminus, to share knowledge and strengthening of the awareness of their plight, to promote control of the biotope preservation and nature conservation in their homelands, the preservation and enlargement of the available aquarium populations. You'll notice that the order that I went in matches this pretty well.
And that's because
I was very much formulating on I'm trying to call attention to them and how they do things, because mm-hmm. I think what they're doing is great. The second thing I really want to highlight about them is they do an annual census of their members, of what they have and what they're doing. Not everyone who's active participates. If you're listening to this podcast and you don't, shame on you.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for a particular species, I don't think you should be that picky with licorice gouramis, to be honest, because
that's a good point.
They're all amazing and they all deserve love. Whichever one you can find, that's the one you should love.
Yeah.
But it's a great way to track of like which species are well represented, which ones aren't. Where are the people that are breeding this species? There's a random pocket in Germany of like 8 people breeding this one species, and you can find all that information from these annual censuses. So is that the plural of census? Censuses?
Maybe censees?
Censees?
Sensei? Sensei.
Sensei. I think, what was the one you say? Censees?
Censees?
I think that's right.
Censuses?
Sensera?
Get out of here. Yeah.
Senseless.
Yeah. And I honestly, I think this is really important to me because this is going to hurt to say, I honestly think the future of these species is in aquariums. Ben brought up the story. It's happening so fast that like in order for us to prevent it, we needed to have started like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not there. Like enforcing new law, passing new laws, enforcing new laws, getting it to happen internationally, that takes years.
Vote with your money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's, for most of them, it's too late. Like mm-hmm. that's the sad reality. So the only thing that we as hobbyists can do is continue their existence in tanks and give them a home, give them a new environment.
Well, that's the thing. The best time to start was 10 years ago. The second best time is right now.
Yeah,
exactly. I love that phrase.
This group is really emblematic to me of like the direction I'd love to see the aquarium hobby take too. Like, this to me is leading, where, like, imagine how much power we would have if we could harness the passion of these people towards something that would make real change. If half of the people in every aquarium club across America, across the world, contributed $5, how much rainforest could we buy?
A lot.
Wow. You just made it real.
There's a lot of things that this group of passionate people, like you are listening to this podcast, can do. So start thinking about it.
Well, how about this? If one person in every aquarium club in the United States was a dedicated licorice grimy person with one pair.
Mm-hmm.
One pair.
You know how much difference that would make for the entire genus in the world?
Even if only half of them were successful.
Yes.
It would be huge. And you could be responsible for an entire species being in existence, just yourself.
Like, when I say, I think a genuine fair estimate of how many licorice grimy breeders in the world is, I think a couple hundred is pretty on the nose, to be honest.
I think I want to be 101. I mean, I keep trying to figure out what I'm going to do with this space here, Nick. I did a plant project. I don't want to do that anymore. Maybe I want to do licorice grimies.
Yeah, plant projects are a lot of input. Blackwater projects are a slow burn.
Yeah. I think I need that. Mm.
Good thinking.
All right, so we know where they come from.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
Protect orangutan habitat, and you protect licorice grimies. That needed to be reiterated, right? Like,
yes,
because nobody other than, you know, the 100 people that breed them and the other 100 people mm-hmm. that think they're cool really care about licorice grimies.
Mm-hmm.
But the World Wildlife Fund has made the orangutan a face of environmentalism, and that makes people care about it. By the way, that's complimenting, not taken away from it. So,
oh yeah,
go protect orangutan habitat, and you protect licorice grimies.
Go protect any habitat, yeah. Honestly.
Like, yeah, we're focusing on licorice grimies here right now.
Yeah.
So we know how to keep them.
Mm-hmm.
We know what to feed them. We know how to make black water. You can make black water light with a lot of these species. You don't have to make, you know, tea that you can't see through.
Yeah. You don't have to make beer in a tank.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
If you don't have an LFS that can get them, first thing I would say, talk to your LFS. If you're in driving distance of watercolors, you can get them from us. If your LFS doesn't have a source, have them reach out to us. We'll give them a source. Or then that's when you can start looking online. And I've seen them on Aquabid and the Wet Spot. Are the places that I would send people to.
Blackwater Aquatics gets them sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Blackwater, okay. Before you go to those online places, check your local fish store.
You may be surprised.
Yep, talk to someone at your local fish store. A lot of them might say, we don't sell those when we get them, but maybe we can get some for you.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. The reality is most of the time a store doesn't carry something. The reason is not we can't get it, it's no one buys them.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's 90% of the answers when people ask me why we don't have something. No one buys them.
Right.
And then half the time they're like, oh, do you want me to order it? No, don't worry about it. Okay, I won't.
So you don't want it that bad. Yeah. Want it that bad if they ask the store to order it. If not, then Wet Spot or Blackwater.com, some of those sites.
Yeah.
And there's where to get them.
You can always reach out to us directly too, and we can help you find legitimate sources or even just collab with you on, hey, is this look sketchy to you? Does this look real to you? We're here to help.
Heck yeah.
Licorice gram breeders. We need them.
There we go.
Yes. I like it. And you can reach out to us on Facebook through our Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast listeners group, or send a message to us on Facebook or Instagram, or you can email podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. We do really appreciate reading all of your messages and comments. It means a lot to us.
Yeah.
I think it's time for a licorice grimy shirt.
Ooh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. You should do that one. That would work really well for you.
You know what I want?
The stripes. Yeah.
But hear me. Like, I want you to do it in your line drawing style, but like the blue stripes are blue instead of black.
I don't know. If it's got color, that's one of Amy's drawings.
It's true.
Apparently this debate is one that we're going to be on.
Would you say it would licorice on?
No,
I wouldn't say that.
No.
They don't look like...
Try. That was a swing and a miss.
I know.
It was a little stretch too far.
It worked in my head for some reason, and the second I started saying it, I was like, this isn't going to work.
This isn't going to work. All right, guys. Well, we're getting a little silly here. Shameless plug. Go to our website, watercolorsgrammy.gallery.com. Check it out. That's where the merch is. Get an email out to...
podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com.
Let's get some questions for us. That's going to be a really fun one. You heard the one with the staff questions. We want to hear your questions, so it'll be a fun one.
Top them in how silly your questions are? That is the question.
Yes. Here we go. Here's the challenge to anyone who's posted on our Watercolors podcast listeners page. If you've posted there, I'm requiring you to send us a question. It can be silly.
That's right. Otherwise, you're not allowed to listen anymore.
Shh, don't say that.
Oh, okay.
Dude, in our staff one, I snuck in a question about what's the circumference of a moose just to try and mess with the moderator. That's okay.
Moose bit my sister once.
That's a story for another day. All right. We're getting a little silly, guys. So thank you so much for listening. Let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.